You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden on KALW 91.7 FM, and we dancing in the studio. Have you ever had a relative that you couldn't wait to sit by during a family function because they always have good stories to tell? Well, Ben Tucker, that is that kind of guy. He was part of the great migration of African Americans to the West. He was an All-American track star back in the 1960s when he ran for San Jose State, a preschool teacher in Berkeley, a social worker in Harlem, a track coach in Nigeria. Ben has done so much, and he writes about his life in his memoir, A Good Run. Now, Ben performs storytelling, but he doesn't just talk about himself. So you can watch Ben Tucker deliver his storytelling magic in person at the San Francisco Free Folk Festival on Saturday, July 11th at Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. And Ben joins me in studio as well. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Janae.
So good to see you. It's funny. People have been telling me to talk to you, and I'm glad we made it happen. And we met at the Black History event at the Chase Center earlier this year, so I'm glad we were able to connect. So, and I've seen you perform, and I've enjoyed your storytelling. What led you to becoming a storyteller?
It's very interesting. You know, my folks were always great storytellers. Yeah. My father, grandfather, my uncle, and I love sitting down, listening to them talk at family reunions and during the holidays and the whole bit. And so I was like an old soul hanging out with the old folks and listening to their stories. And so when I retired in 2003, mm-hmm. a friend of mine told me about this performing arts program called Stage Bridge.
Yes.
For seniors.
Yes.
And I got involved with theater and then eventually storytelling.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I like about your story is that you try so many things. Like, you're doing storytelling, and doing theater, running. What gives you the courage to just try?
Well, it all comes back to when I grew up. I grew up in San Francisco.
Right.
Just on the other side of the freeway over there. So coming over here is like homecoming.
Yeah.
And always wanted to belong, just like anybody else, trying to find my affinity group. And so I try a little this, try a little that. And then I finally found my niche when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a basketball player. I only had one problem. I couldn't play basketball.
that's a big problem, Ben.
That's a big problem, big problem. And so I got cut from the team. But what I really wanted was I wanted to be a letterman. I went to Polytechnic High School,
okay.
right across the street from the Golden Gate Park. And when I got called into the coach's office and he says, Ben, I'm going to have to cut you from the team. Oh, it was like a blow.
Yeah.
And I was so sad.
You also, too, I read in your book, you were trying to get girls. That was another reason why
you wanted to. Why else you want to be a letterman? You know, you got to be the big man on campus, be popular with the ladies. And all of that good stuff. But the other thing that happened, though, all of my friends were on the basketball team, and we're all Black, came mm-hmm. from the hood, Bayview. And when I got cut from the team, I was separated from my group. But the coach told me, he said, Ben, you're not a basketball player, but you are a runner. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I see you running up and down the court and around the Golden Gate Park. You can run cross country. I said, what's that, coach? I was a city kid. He said, we run through over hills and over dales and up and down. I said, oh, I can do that. I'm from San Francisco. I walk up and down these hills.
Yeah.
So I tried out for a team that I didn't know anything about, cross country. And much to my shock and dismay, when I showed up for practice, everybody on the team with little skinny white guys.
Okay.
And so I'm out of my comfort zone. And so that told me that if I wanted to get to where I wanted to be, I had to get out of my comfort zone. And that's what I did.
And then you went on. That's amazing that you didn't know how fast you were until high school. And then you end up, you got a full ride to San Jose State University.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then you became this track star. Like, what was that like? I mean, especially this was in the early 1960s. And I remember just hearing from my parents. Back, well, they were at San Jose State in the 70s. It was farm country. That's what my mom
That's
always
right.
says. It was farm
That's
country.
Right.
So what was it like for you to go from San Francisco, you know, the city to San Jose and to like just blow up and be this track star.
Yeah, even though, you know, San Jose was only like 49, 50 miles away from San Francisco,
right.
It was a whole different world.
Yeah.
We called it cowboy country because it was mostly farm.
Yeah.
And it was a tough transition. But one of the things that was really good is our track coach, Bud Winters, he recruited some of the finest African-American athletes, not only from California, but from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We had athletes from Australia. We had athletes from Nigeria. We had athletes from Venezuela.
Wow.
And that core group of black athletes on that campus, we all hung together, and we had no EOP, no equal opportunity. But 99% of our athletes, student athletes, and that's what we were, student athletes, we graduated only because of that cohesiveness within that college campus, because there was nothing else for us outside.
Yeah. But you got off that campus because you made All-American in your sophomore year, right?
All-American in my junior year.
Your junior year,
junior year and my senior year. All-American in track and field and in cross country. And we were two-time NC2A back-to-back champions in cross country.
And you competed around the country.
Around the country and around the world.
Yes. It took you to Europe.
Took me to Europe.
What, I mean, you know, because you're born in Shreveport. Like I said, you were part of the Great Migration. And then you were the first in your family to fly on a plane?
First what?
First in your family to fly on an airplane?
First in my family to fly on an airplane.
Wow.
Yes.
What did, you know, running track and being so much exposed to the world when you know, when your family comes from a small town in Louisiana. I mean, they migrated to San Francisco, but still,
mm-hmm.
come from a small, you know, your roots are from a small town in Louisiana. How did you see the world when you kind of got out of your bubble and you were like flying, right? Like, you were so fast, too.
It was amazing, but, you know, my parents really grounded me,
mm-hmm.
and they made me feel, and all my extended relatives, like, I was somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we came from real good, solid roots in Louisiana. We had, you know, core beliefs. And my mother was a real activist. You know, she wanted to be a school teacher, but she mm-hmm. couldn't go to school beyond high school. And mm-hmm. she instilled a lot of self-worth in us. And so I had a lot of self-confidence. I wasn't cocky, but I was sure that, you know, I could hang, and there was a big world out there, and I saw it. It was just like seeing that bite, and I said, I'm going to take a bite of this apple, and I'm going to get all that I can out of it. And I saw opportunities, and my parents always told me that prepare yourself, and when opportunity comes, you'll be ready to take advantage of it.
One of the things I like about your book, A Good Run, is there's so much family history. You know so much family, which a lot of people don't. I mean, you can go back to your great-great-grandparents, and a lot of people can't do that. So I know this is not my family, but I was interested. I was like, this is so interesting. I was just digging into it. Now, you're one of six.
Six.
Okay, you're one of six. Okay, and so this was very interesting. Your great-great-grandfather, John F. Herden, was a white man, and he was in a common-law marriage with your great-great-grandmother, and her name was Lou Patsy Charles.
Okay. Correct.
Okay. So she was enslaved, but he freed her, but they still, you know, she still lived on his plantation. He had other people enslaved. But Lou and John had two children, and they migrated from Virginia to Louisiana. That's so much American history. When you discovered that, what went through your mind?
Well,
because those are kind of stories people try and hide.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, when I, you know, I'd always heard, you know, that there were white folks in the family. I mean, our family goes from blue-black to, you know, blonde, blue eyes. Yeah. You know, they could pass.
Right.
In fact, some of them did pass.
Mm-hmm.
So we always knew it, but then my brother did a lot of digging. He found pictures. He went to the different census bureaus and actually saw a picture of John Herndon Franklin.
Wow.
And his middle name is Frederick.
Okay.
And so is my middle name, Frederick, too.
Wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, why on earth would my grandmother, mm-hmm. name me after a slaveholder?
Okay.
But he did have 6 to 9 kids with my great-great-grandma.
Okay.
And when each of them were born, he did free them.
Okay.
But he did keep at least around 200 of those other slaves.
Wow.
Enslaved. He did not free them.
200?
He only freed them upon his death. That was part of his will that he left. He said, upon my death, free all of my slaves. And the other thing he did was he did found the first black elementary school in Cato Parish.
Wait. The white guy.
Yes. My grandpa.
Wow.
My grandpa, the white guy.
Okay, great-great-grandpa. Your great-great-grandpa. Wow, yes. He found it.
So, you know, it was really something. And when I was doing the research, I was talking to a couple of friends of mine who happened to be white.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, Ben, he was a slaveholder, but he was a benevolent slaveholder. And I said, that's an oxymoron. Mm. How can you be benevolent and be a slaveholder, okay? So I still am kind of conflicted about old John Herndon. But at the same time, I think he was pretty good to my grandma. And he left 150 acres that he passed on to my grandmother, my great-great-grandmother. And we passed it on down, and we still have that land in our family to this day. And we're fighting to hold on to it. Because, as you know, air property is some of the most vulnerable property.
Oh, yeah.
And the buzzards are circling, and they've been trying to get that land back. But our family is working. Now we're developing a limited liability corporation to make sure that we can't get any of that land picked off by the land folks that are trying to look for oil and other minerals on that land.
And this is in northern Louisiana, right? Like near Shreveport.
It's right out, it's a little small town right outside of Shreveport, about 50 miles.
Okay. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with storyteller and author Ben Tucker. His memoir is A Good Run, and he takes readers from Louisiana to San Francisco to San Jose State, where he was an All-American track and field star, to the Civil Rights Movement and Vietnam War, Europe. He's been everywhere. Ben has such an interesting life, and his book is available on Amazon and at Books, Inc. in Alameda. You can hear Ben Tucker do live storytelling at the San Francisco Free Folk Festival on Saturday, July 11th at Golden Gate Park in, of course, San Francisco. So let the folks hear what you can do. You got a story for me? I know you got plenty of stories for me.
I got tons of stories. But I got a story especially for you, Janine, because when you called and gave me the directions, you told me, oh, Mr. Tucker, how are you going to get here? You're going to drive? I said, no, I love public transportation.
Right.
And she says, well, you can take public transportation, but you better take an Uber because our studio sits on a steep hill. And I said, I'm going to take public transportation.
Yes, you did.
And so, having said that, I said, I've got a story that I'm going to talk about.
All right.
Why I can do this. And it's called The Hills That Raised Me.
Okay.
I grew up at the top of a hill on Topeka Street. And it's between Apollo and Venus. That should tell you a little something. It connotes heights. Mm-hmm. And whenever I left home, was to go to school or go down the hill to get something from the grocery store, I had to go down a hill or go up a hill. There was no getting around it. To go to school, I had to get up, go down, up, down, up. And little did I know that those hills were actually making me a lot stronger. I was only 8 years old. So I had a paper route, and I had an old raggedy bike, And I used to have to pedal that bike up, no gears, none of that stuff. And so basically, I didn't realize I was really, really building character. But here's the twist. Those hills, much to my knowledge that I didn't have, was turning me into a runner, a world-class runner. While other kids were rolling around, you know, in the streets and the flats and everything, I was training. Now, the hills didn't really care if I was tired. They didn't care if I was small. They didn't care if my bike was held together with ropes and clothespins. The hills just said, climb, climb if you want to get to your destination. Now, years later, when I got into running, racing, and everything, and I ran into that first hill, everybody slowed down. I speeded up because compared to that hill was nothing compared to my childhood. Now, this is what it's like, I said to myself when I was going up that hill in that race. I said, I feel like I'm back in the hood. Now, today, I'm 83 years old. I'm headed to a radio station on top of the hill, Burton High School. And so I get off the BART, I don't take the Uber, and I'm out here reenacting my childhood at 83, coming up that long slope. And the hills to me is the same thing as altitude is for the Kenyan runners. They have that natural built-in because of their environment. And so the hills of San Francisco, they are in my DNA. Now, San Francisco didn't just give me a neighborhood with the best weather and the best views. It gave me grit. It gave me endurance. It gave me legs that had carried me for 83 years. And you know what? I'm still climbing and they still carrying me. Now, every hill taught me something. Don't fear the climb. Don't quit halfway. And never, ever stop reaching for that next view. As long as I could put one foot in front of the other, I'm going to keep on moving upward, upward and over. So, if you remember anything from my story today, remember this. Keep climbing. Keep growing. Keep believing, because the best view always comes after the hardest hill. And as Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell said, ain't no mountain high enough.
Hey.
Ain't no valley low enough to keep me from my view. Because the view isn't just at the top of the hill, it's found in a life lived with courage, hope, and perseverance. At 83 years old, I'm still climbing, and I hope all of you out there in radio land will be doing the same thing when you get to that age in life. So keep on keeping on.
Clap, 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 clap. Ben Tucker, I love your stories. Wow. At 83, now you hike. And you still hike, because you hike, we were talking about this earlier, you hike 8 miles once a week.
Every Monday morning.
At 83. At 83. You still moving.
Still traveling. Still traveling.
Wow. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Like I said, you just have such an interesting story. And we have a few minutes, you know, and I have so many questions I want to ask you, but much of your work is in service. Well, you know, when you were working was in service to the community. You were a preschool teacher, a social worker, a recruiter at Cal, administrator at Cal. You were a leader at Head Start here.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the first inaugural programs, Head Start San Francisco, Western Addition and in the city of Berkeley.
Yes, yes, yes. You're from San Francisco, grew up in Bayview, Hunters Point, but also to live most of your life in the East Bay. You know, you've helped people, and you worked at the San Francisco Zen Center. You've been to so many different places, Urban League when you were in New York. Where did you get the passion for service? Because that definitely came across in your book. You were passionate about service. You were passionate about the community.
Got it from my mom.
Okay.
Like I said earlier, my mom wanted to be a school teacher. She wasn't able to go to college because of Jim Crow in the South. But she always encouraged us to go for education, but also not for the money, but to go for the service. You know, my mom was a PTA leader. I didn't particularly like that because she was always up at the school and everybody thought I were in trouble. Oh, your mama's here. You must be in trouble. Yeah. And she also was in the voter registration. We always had the polling booth in our basement. She was big in the church, you know, senior center. She'd go down to City Hall and lobby for this and that. And so she said, if you want things to get better, you gotta make it better. Yeah. Don't just sit and complain. Get involved and do.
Okay. Yeah, because that was so many things, you know, came to me when I was reading your book. And speaking of service, I'm thinking of the service, because definitely something else that was very interesting in your book was Vietnam. You were just graduating out of college, right, when Vietnam War started. And they were drafting folks.
Left and right.
And you got a one-way ticket. To Europe.
I became a draft dodger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what happened? We got 3 minutes.
Okay. What happened? I'll do the three-minute drill. What happened was I tried to be a conscience objector. I wrote all kinds of passionate pleas while I was against the war, and I got turned down. And basically one guy said, hey, we don't care about that. We just need some bodies.
Right.
And so when they told me that they were going to draft me and my buddy Ernie Kelly, we hitchhiked across America, went to New York, and took a trip to Sweden where they had help for those folks who were resisting the draft. Now, I was over there for about a year, bounced around, but I got homesick. I got tired of that European cuisine. I missed some of that good soul food. And the winters were so cold in Sweden. Yeah. Came back, and I was indicted.
Right, by the U.S. government.
I was indicted, and I was at the courthouse down on Golden Gate, and I stood before the judge, and I had a wonderful lawyer by the name of Aubrey Grossman, and he got me off on a technicality because I never received my final draft notice. And so I beat the rap because of that, and I was able to, but I very well could have gone to jail. When I was standing in that court, they took a lot of people out that back door. They came in through the front. They went out through the back. But I was able to beat the draft thanks to the Draft Counseling Center in this good old city of Berkeley. And I got a pro bono lawyer, and I beat the rap. And that was a courageous stand, the most courageous stand I ever took in my life. And I did it because of Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
Because Ali was also indicted and around the same time. And I said, if Ali can do it, so can I. So all praises to that great boxer and activist, Ali. He was my hero, even though we're around the same age.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, because when I read that, I said, what? Like, I mean, but you know, people had to do what they had to do to survive. Okay, real quick, 30 seconds. You're in your 80s, you're 83. What is one of the greatest lessons you've learned?
The greatest lesson I've learned in life, and I've learned many of them, is the thing is adversity will strike, and adversity is always there. We have to learn how to deal with adversity and turn lemons into lemonades. And I've always been able to see that little silver lining. And just like where we're in these times now, we're going to get through these folks. We've been here already. And as, what's my man's name? we gonna be all right.
Ah, Lamar. Kendrick Lamar.
We gonna be all right, folks. Let's just keep on keeping on.
Yeah, because you've seen a whole lot.
Yes.
So I'm gonna take your word for that. Ben Tucker, I'm so happy we got to meet and we got to connect. This is a great book, I think. You know, I know definitely for your family, but just for people in the Bay Area, it's a really, really good book. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Ben Tucker is a storyteller. His memoir is A Good Run, and you can get his book on Amazon and at Books Inc. in Alameda. And make sure you check him out at the San Francisco Free Folk Festival on Saturday, July 11th at Golden Gate Park in San Francisco.